Welcome back to the Zero Pressure podcast series, a relaxed conversation with those on the cutting edge of science and technology, hosted by me, Helen Sharman, and presented by Imperial College London and Saab. The Zero Pressure podcast series is looking at how science and technology positively can contribute to solving complex, interrelated global challenges of today and tomorrow. Today, we're talking about connectivity, in particular 5G and 6G. In telecommunications, wireless devices in a geographical area or cell use radio waves to communicate with the cell's base station. The base station has antennas that receive and transmit radio signals at licensed frequencies, and the cells are interconnected by a network of base stations. So when I use my cell phone, it sends a signal to a base station, which connects me to the network, and that lets me access the internet and perhaps read my mail and use telephone systems. The time between sending a message and getting a response that might, for instance, show my message has been delivered is often called the latency. It's what as users we perceive as a delay. A lower latency means a faster response time. 5G is the fifth generation standard of mobile internet connection. How will these upcoming new technology standards for cellular networks transform the way we live and work? What are the implications for aerospace, defence and security? How will the technology affect positioning, navigation and timing services, on which we're becoming increasingly reliant? And will 5G really affect our health? I'm very pleased to be joined today on Zero Pressure by our guest, Dr. Magnus Fröhlich. Magnus is Vice President and Head of Research at Ericsson, where he's held various key senior positions in research and development and product management, notably with the evolution of standards, and now with 6G. He holds 29 patents and is Adjunct Professor in Wireless Infrastructures at KTH, Sweden's Royal Institute of Technology. Welcome to Zero Pressure, Magnus, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Can we start talking about connectivity itself? What does connectivity mean to you? And do you think there's a difference between connectivity and communication?
To me, you are able to communicate over the connectivity, so to say. So to me, that is a little bit of a difference. Traditionally, it has been very much of connecting two persons, being able then to transfer user data from, if it's voice or if it's video calls, etc. But now lately that connectivity is broadened, since you are talking to machines and machines talks to machines, and it's not sort of only the picture or the sound that is transmitted. It's getting richer and richer, the different things that is transmitted over this connectivity. So I think that the term on the connectivity is getting broader and broader, and communication will have a lot of different flavors as well. So it's a good question on how you should view this, but I think connectivity is sort of the general technology in order to connect two entities, and then they can communicate over that in different ways.
Okay, let's dive into 5G and more, right? So can you explain what makes 5G and even 6G and other generations possibly so different in terms of what it can do from the kind of 3G and 4G that most of us currently use, let's say, on our personal phones?
The difference for consumers using going from 4G to 5G, doing approximately the same things they did before, then the difference isn't that significant or that clearly visible, because the 5G networks will have higher capacity, it will provide higher data rates, and perhaps you will notice that the delays are a little bit shorter and so on. So there is just more mobile broadband with more performance, higher data buckets, etc. Right. So from that point of view, it's really an evolution. What's then interesting is the other capabilities of 5G, which is more than targeting enterprises and the possibilities to use the technology in sort of supply chains, in the manufacturing, in following the products when they are on the market, and even then controlling the products when they are out on the market, right? So you can remotely control them, or you can have intelligence on board that is able to communicate with other machines on top of this technology. So that's really opened up a completely new market, really, complementing the mobile broadband for consumers. In order to do that, you really need to have low latency. You need to have a consistent delay, so to say, and the robustness and resilience is important things in order to be able to move into these new areas.
I can imagine a lot of consumers thinking, I'm dealing with 3 and 4G, my phone, particularly on 4G, works quite fine. I don't need any more. But you're saying it's not actually the person with, walking around the street with their phone. It's actually going to be much more perhaps business and other activities that 5G might enable us to do. I mean, what about the actual technology itself? What is it? Is it just a bit faster, just sort of a higher frequency? Is there anything else that I'm sure there is a lot more than just high frequency? What else does 5G and 6G involve?
It has similarities from 4G to 5G. It's still the UFDM, the multiplexing technology, and so on. The big difference is the fact that it's designed to have a higher bandwidth, so you can get more data in. And then it really takes the full benefit of massive MIMO, that is massive input, massive output, meaning that you can have many, many antennas on the transmit side and on the receive side. So today, base stations then have antennas with a couple of hundred antenna elements. And that makes it possible to have multiple users connected at the same time, with then transmitting parallel information to many users in the same time and frequency. So by that, you can really have a much, much higher capacity. And it's also so that even though we are going up in frequency in order to get more bandwidth, we can still sort of maintain the coverage due to this, the antenna gains that we can achieve with these antennas. So the use of the antenna technology has really been the key technology in order to make 5G as powerful as it is from a capacity and coverage point of view. So that's a key thing.
Okay, so sticking with 5G just for the moment, what is 5G going to allow us to do that 4G doesn't? I mean, do we need 5G for driverless cars, for instance?
So if there are cars that needs information about seeing around corners, if you want to control the traffic in a crossing or something, you would need low latency, reliable communication links. And that is exactly what 5G is then designed to provide. Said that, it's still so that you can use it over 4G as well. If you are along the highway and nothing special happens and the car needs updates of maps or something, of course, 4G will provide that. But if you want to really do this more time critical, then 5G will have a much better performance.
In what ways are people already using 5G? I mean, it has been rolled out in quite a few cities, hasn't it?
People are starting to use different cameras, body cameras. You are seeing that the first versions of glasses, some simple augmented reality glasses, etc., are being tried out.
That sounds interesting. So augmented reality, is it like a bit like virtual reality? Is that what that means?
When you are in virtual reality, then you put on this headset, right? And then you don't see the physical world anymore. You are just in the digital. So you're moving yourself into this virtual digital reality where you can then interact with others in that digital world, right? So it could be avatars or some picture of yourself, etc. And then you can experience different things. You can go on with different vacation trips, etc., and be on the beach or whatever you would like to do, right?
Oh, there we go. So 5G can take us to the beach while we're sitting in the comfort of our sofas at home.
Yeah, exactly. And you can think there are a lot of different gadgets that you can put on and feel the heat and the wind blowing and whatnot.
Ooh, so we can have real physical sensation. It's not just sort of the kind of the visual that we get at the moment and the sound.
The augmented reality is different. There you still are able to see and be in the physical world. And then you get additional digital information that you can then experience. So you can have virtual objects being placed in your physical reality. So you can have a something on the desk, or you can decide that the desk should be red now, or I mean, you can change the way that you see the physical reality, but you still sort of are in the physical and you are interacting in the physical. And you can, of course, have a hologram of your friends. So you have the experience that your friends are sitting beside you in the sofa, and you are able to have a conversation as if you were there at the same time. Or you can be somewhere else, right? So I think this augmented reality will be much more interesting, I think, even though, of course, the virtual reality is perhaps easier to do. But the augmented is the real killer, I think.
We'll be back with Magnus shortly. Here's Rajan Luthra, an engineer with an MBA in national security and counterterrorism. Rajan heads special projects in the chairman's office at Reliance Industries Limited, India's largest company, which has completed 5G coverage planning in over 1,000 cities. He has over 3 decades of experience in large-scale deployment of emerging technologies and has built deep engagement with global innovation ecosystems, leading think tanks and industry bodies. Rajan, are cyber attacks more likely as we are better connected?
Very much so. I think it's an unavoidable reality that as we see more widespread proliferation of highly affordable internet of everything with billions of sensors and edge computing devices and smartphones being used by almost everyone and every application, cybersecurity shall continue to become a bigger and a bigger challenge, in my view. It's not that 5G is less secure. In fact, 5G is much more secure than the previous telecom standards. Yet, I think that the diversity of applications and the deployment of the scale at which it will get deployed will just make sure that the cyber threats will increase.
How can we mitigate against that?
Many of the cyber attack risk mitigation approaches that are being followed today will need to continue, whether you're securing your enterprise network or your own devices. But I think at a more macro level, if we were to see moving forward, this will really require a 5-pronged approach, in my view. One, at a geopolitical level, the global partnerships and alliances shall need to be strengthened such that serious cyber attacks by state and non-state actors are treated at par with acts of war or terrorism. Number two, at a regulatory level, data privacy and cybersecurity standards need to continue to evolve and keep in at least at par with the technology developments as well. Number three, on a technology layer, we need to keep the innovation and the development of the cyber security technologies to thwart the intent of the cyber criminals. At another operational level, you will need to continue the sensitization of everybody from the CEOs and the boards to any common citizen on the challenges and the do's and don'ts that they need to adopt. And I think these practical operational aspects will need to become far more rigorous in their awareness. And lastly, I think we will start seeing more wider adoption of continuous and automatic scanning of the networks and the compute devices for vulnerabilities, and they're getting fixed in real time. I think those are 5 macro level approaches which I think will start making a bigger impact.
Thank you to Rajan Luthra. And now let's go back to Magnus Fröding. So tell me now about 6G. What is that going to be transformative? Is it so different from 5G, or is it just another incremental change?
6G will build on the success of 5G, right? So it's important now that 5G advanced, that is coming, that we are able to explore and develop these use cases that we talk about. If it's the smart city with all connected objects, the digital twinning of everything, right? And all of these augmented reality applications we talk about. Then I think 6G will then, hopefully then, we will understand these use cases better. We will know more exactly what is needed. And then we are able to fine-tune technology in order to meet these demands. And based then on 6G technology, we should be able to scale this so it could be a service that everybody can use at the same time. So to say that we have full capacity for it and it's affordable and you can do it in a sustainable way and everything. That's, of course, the simple way of thinking about 6G, that it will fill that gap that will be generated by the success of 5G, and then you want to scale that, you will see that it's enormous data rates that would be needed, and you would need a much more capable system to sort of gradually take over from 5G to 6G. We are researching things that you can use joint communication and sensing. So you can use the communication network to also sense the environment, so you can have a better real-time updated version of the environment. And by that, you can do more advanced sort of virtual reality services if you can have that updated picture of the surrounding. So I think there will be technology components in 6G open up for even more advanced possibilities.
6G is, as I understand it, is, again, it's even higher frequency. But it's a huge difference, is it not? From so 4G to 5G is adding a few extra gigahertz, is that right? And then we go up to sort of terahertz with 6G. Am I sort of talking the right ballpark?
Yeah, and here I think it's important to differ a little bit with what could be the sort of the main frequency band and what is sort of the available high frequency bands. So for 5G, we were then going from 2.6 to 3.5 as the main bands, you can say. And then we added the millimeter wave band, as we call them, which is more centimeter actually, but in the range of 28 gigahertz, right, bands and 40 and a little bit different bands up to 100 gigahertz. That is 5G bands, high bands. And 6G now, we are planning to see if we can get frequency allocations above 6-7 gigahertz, where they should be able to have really, really large bandwidths that could be the main bands of the technology. And then you're right, then we are looking at what is called a sub-terahertz, which is then in the range of 100 to 300 gigahertz. But then the challenges of propagation will be even higher, of course. So it is really line of sight technology or within a room type of technology. So it could be very, very useful for extremely high data rates for different conference rooms or meeting rooms that you would like to have these immersive experiences or something, right? Or having this holographic communication at the restaurant or something. It could still be very, very useful. But it's not sort of the wide area technology. There we need lower bands. And we are really hopeful to get interesting and very valuable bands there around 6, 7, 8, in that range.
I've also been talking with Professor Manisha Ghosh, Professor of Electrical Engineering at Notre Dame University in Indiana. Having recently completed a term as Chief Technology Officer at the Federal Communications Commission, where she was closely involved with setting national strategy and technology specifications related to the rapid growth of broadband wireless communications technologies, Manisha now directs policy outreach of the National Science Foundation's Spectrum Innovation Centre, Spectrum X. How is defense using connectivity?
So it's very interesting what's happening with the way the defense departments in many countries are beginning to view commercial networks. Most often when, DOD, the Department of Defense in the US, I'll take that as an example, when they deploy overseas or in a conflict zone, they usually deploy their own secure networks to keep their communications secure. But more and more, the thought has been that once we start thinking about future networks like 5G or 6G, they offer a lot of functionality beyond what even the DoD specialized networks can offer. And how can the DoD actually leverage these commercial networks, but do it in a secure way? The analogy that's often used in the US and has been used in a recent research program right now is that when DoD deploys overseas, they don't build their own bridges and tunnels and roads. They use what's there, but they secure them. And if they can do the same thing with wireless networks, that that increases efficiency, reduces costs, and perhaps even makes people better connected.
Do you have any particular examples of how defense is using commercial wireless networks, maybe in the future 5G?
We have examples in Ukraine of how the use of commercial networks has actually led to people losing their lives because they've been tracked by the network. So that tells you what the dangers of using a commercial network without adequately securing it can be. So I think there is still a process where we have to truly understand, depending on where you're deployed, is it a friendly nation? Is it a cooperative nation? Is it a non-cooperative nation? As to how much you can trust their deployed networks to keep your personnel safe. We obviously want to be connected, but at the same time, you don't want to expose the soldier on the field to harm because they've used a commercial 5G network. So I don't know exactly and I shouldn't be knowing who is using what, but there's definitely a lot of research and interest in understanding how one can do this securely.
And to be clear, does 5G affect our health?
No. As far as we know, there is nothing that is on the record that shows that 5G is any worse from the health perspective than any wireless network that we've had over the last, 30 or 40 years.
Thank you to Manisha Ghosh. And now let's go back to Magnus Fruedi. What about aerospace more generally? How can we use better connectivity to improve what happens in aerospace? I mean, just from what you said before about antennas, I can imagine perhaps even something that can move, or something steerable possibly. Would that help?
Yeah, exactly. The antennas are not sort of steered physically, but electronically, you are pointing the beams in different directions already today, right? And of course, you can also point them upwards to cover then flying objects. And here, I think there are a little bit of different kinds of applications. So one is, of course, if you can see a lot of drone activities, a lot of delivery drones and controlling things and monitoring things and so on. So a lot of different things in this future automation, smart delivery, smart cities. There are a lot of drones involved in this. So obviously then you would like to have these drones connected, and you would like to have some sort of air traffic control of them, etc. So then the capabilities of the sort of the mobile infrastructure to also cover these are key. And this is already ongoing to be standardized. There are a little bit new interference scenarios, etc. So there are some things you need to consider in order to get a good performance. But that is fairly small additions that is needed. So that's ongoing. Then, of course, we have more passenger airplanes, right, flying much, much higher. And then I think there will be a solution which is a combination of satellite connectivity. And also in satellite, there is now an integration of 5G technology into satellite communication, right? So you can use the 5G technology also over satellite. Then, of course, you can have from satellite to planes. Then when they come closer, landing and taking off, etc., then of course it should be the ground system. Again, then with antennas directed upwards in order to provide the high capacity that is needed. And then when you are overseas, of course, then you need to rely on the satellites, etc. And there is a lot of research on this. You talk about this gate-to-gate connectivity, and you can just use your connectivity in your phone all the time, right?
So will it be seamless between the different types of technology?
Yes, it should be fully seamless.
And then even sort of higher up usage. So you've talked already about 5G to satellites, but that's for us to use in aeroplanes and perhaps on the ground as well. But what about using sort of possibly 5 and 6G actually in space? We've got all sorts of constellations of satellites. Would they use 6G? Will we need 6G on the moon when we've got sort of astronauts plenty of astronauts wandering around in different places, parts of the moon? Will we want 6G up there? What do you think? Crystal ball, I know.
I think that this again is, it will be sort of an interesting application, and you will be able to use the technology also in these scenarios. But of course, the customer group is a little bit limited today, so it needs a little bit special projects and things in order to get development of that, of course.
Yeah, and I'm sure that customer group is expanding as we speak.
Yes.
Last month on Zero Pressure, we discussed positioning, navigation and timing services. I mean, how might these services in particular be affected by 5G and 6G?
I think these are two good examples of additional values that can be delivered out of the networks. So we already have positioning today, right? But it's not that accurate. But that accuracy can be improved when we have higher bandwidths, so you can have a more precise positioning. And then, of course, if you are investing a little bit extra in your communication network, like you have a factory, for example, and you would like to have positioning, both communication and positioning in the factory, it is easy to add the requirements of good positioning in the deployment, of course. And then you can have very accurate positioning out of the networks. Timing is something I think is key, and 5G is now supporting this time-sensitive networks standard, which most likely will be then the future sort of standard when it comes to, this will be Ethernet, TSN, which will use for factory automation, etc., right? And that is also supported by 5G, so you can run that over 5G. But you can also be 5G using Ethernet TSN services for backhaul on 5G signals. So it will work in symbiosis there together with that technology. And then the timing is the key there. And these networks have a very, very good sense of time. So providing exact time information could be very critical if you want to automate things and synchronize different processes, etc. So I think both time and position are good examples of additional values out of the network.
What would you say are the main opportunities and risks of a further connected world?
The main opportunity is really all the benefits of this connectivity and all the services and everything we can use. And I think that it could really sort of improve our lives in the cities and providing smart cities, which is much more inclusive and much more sort of sustainable. So there's a lot of promises on the use of the digitalization in order to transform society into a more sustainable future. So that's I think it's the clear upside of this technology. Then the risks, I think we have touched upon them, and that's of course the privacy. And you can also, of course, think about risks if you use the technology in the wrong way and you are not moving around, you're not exercising, you're sitting there and enjoying this entertainment coming to you or something. So it's important then that this augmented reality type of things, it can be used so we can experience the physical and the digital at the same time, etc. So there are, of course, risks with this technology. But as always, technology can be used for good and for bad, and I think that there is a lot of good things here that I see going forward.
This is the perennial thing with technology, isn't it? That we can, it's our choice how we use it, and that's really what we need the world to debate and come up with some good agreement on. Okay, just before you go, Magnus, very quickly, what point do you think 6G will have been fully integrated in our daily lives? 10 years? 15 years?
I think it's more like 10 years. In 10 years, we will be in the early days of 6G, and then we will see how we will use, how it's sort of kicking in and giving an extra boost on top of 5G.
And if you could name one thing that you would say 6G might make a real big difference to people, what would you say that could be?
Yeah, I think that would be the more advanced augmented reality services. That would be it will make them scale, that make them available for many consumers.
And what are you most excited about when it comes to 6G research at the moment?
I think it is how to make a technology that you could continue to build out the networks and to densify even further to provide a super high capacity in dense areas.
Thank you, Magnus, for an enlightening and really informative discussion about the practicalities and vision for the future of connectivity.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Magnus talked about low latency, consistency and robustness, and the difference 5G and 6G could make to our lives with improved efficiency in manufacturing, drones for deliveries and augmented reality. Positioning and timing will become more precise. 5G can link to satellites to support connectivity in the air seamlessly with networks on the ground. And 6G is most likely to be used very locally, perhaps for a more immersive experience. We also heard about the use of commercial networks by defence, and that cyber attacks are more likely as we become better connected, but that 5G will be more secure than 4G. And we can be confident that 5G will not affect our health, unless we choose to be physically inactive because of all the experiences it offers. Thank you for joining us on this podcast discussion. Do listen in to the upcoming episode of Zero Pressure Podcast. Next month, we'll be talking about speed and the future of speed in the air. What does speed mean for travel and transportation? And what does speed mean for defence? What are the significant engineering challenges with increasing speed? Is there a limit to how fast we can fly? In the meantime, I leave you with this thought by Leonardo da Vinci. Learn how to see. Realise that everything connects to everything else.